When that documentary came out, and Michael said about sharing your bed and that type of thing, what should the prosecution have done? I mean, when people say, let's say I live in a neighborhood and I know there's a 45-year-old man over there. Mm-hmm. I see young boys going in and out or children going in and out. And I hear rumors of alcohol, rumors of pornography, locks on the doors. Should they not have investigated?
Well, first of all, what he said in the documentary was, I gave this child my bed and I slept on the floor. And I've never done anything sexual with a child. That's in the documentary. There's also some outtakes that were not included in the documentary where he even expanded on that. He said, I would slip my wrist before I would hurt a child. Okay, so the prosecution tried to spin this so that you didn't know that's in the documentary. The second thing is, yes, if you think there is a valid claim of child molestation, you should investigate. And they did. 70 officers raided Neverland. They couldn't find any forensic evidence to support the claims. No DNA, no hair, no fiber, no fluids, nothing.
It's fascinating to hear your side of it. We're just talking about DNA evidence, and you mentioned when they went to the Neverland Ranch, they found not a trace of DNA evidence, no fluids, no hair.
No trace.
Is that, I mean, people who are pedophiles, is that common that they would sort of be very careful, or no, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is, but certainly they do find, in this day and age, DNA. Yeah. It's an easy thing to find, and it lasts for, you know, hundreds of years. Yeah. So it's significant they couldn't find any forensic evidence whatsoever to prove this crime, okay, because the crime didn't happen.
Let me ask you about the jury. I was sort of stunned to hear the jury was not sequestered, because this is all anybody talks about. And if I'm on that jury and I walk into McDonald's or anywhere, someone's going to go, hey, you're going to hear something. It's on every TV. It's on every radio. You hear jokes. You hear information that maybe they shouldn't be privy to. Weren't you worried about the question?
I really wasn't. The judge was a very, very good judge. He had the full respect of the jury, I could tell. And he told them very clearly, you cannot listen to any media. You cannot expose yourself to any outside influence. You must follow the law and look at the evidence in the courtroom. And in my opinion, sequestered juries tend to be uncomfortable juries. You know, they're confined, they have limitations, people are watching them. Generally, I don't like it. And I really had a feeling they'd be fair, and they were.
Yeah. The media circus, were you surprised at the extent of people hiding in the bushes, seeing what you put two sugars in your coffee in this thing?
No, I wasn't surprised. I expected that. Yeah. I mean, this had real international interest. You know, Michael is a megastar. He is popular all over the world, and we have support all over the world for our side, so I'm not surprised.
Now, they're not allowed to watch the pundits, but you, when you go home, would you turn it on and see what some of the experts were saying?
Once in a while. I was working very hard. Yeah. You know, normally I read 3 newspapers a day. I wasn't reading any except on the weekends. So once in a while for a break I would. And generally I was pretty unimpressed.
Yeah.
You know, you have...
Were they accurate?
Generally, no.
Okay. Agenda? Did they have an agenda?
Oh,
you mentioned that.
Take Court TV, for example. Okay. I'd always been a fan of Court TV. I'd always respected Court TV, particularly when Steve Brill was running it. In this particular case, in my opinion, they became a tabloid. They had their own agenda. They misstated the facts. They didn't understand the significance of what was going on in the courtroom, and that's why their major critics were stunned by the verdict, and why now they're trying to say there's something wrong with the jury, there's something wrong with the system. They were humiliated because they never really understood what was going on in the courtroom.
Now, the district attorney, Sneddon, is he a fair guy?
In my opinion, no. In this particular case, he had a personal vendetta against Michael Jackson. He wasn't objective. He saw things that didn't exist. When you're not objective, when you're too personally involved, you can really mischaracterize your case. And he mischaracterized his case from day one.
I mean, was he because of the events from 10 years ago?
You know, I don't know exactly why he got so interested in Michael Jackson, but he flew to Australia at one point in the mid-90s to try and find an alleged victim, and the person said, take a hike, get out of here, you know. Mm-hmm. He had a website at the Sheriff's Department to try and see if he could find witnesses to build a case. It was like an open casting call on Michael Jackson, and the best they could come up with was this family that we thoroughly discredited from A to Z. From A to Z.
Now, have you talked to Michael since the verdict?
Oh, sure.
And how's he doing?
He's very drained physically and emotionally. He was dehydrated. He had trouble eating and sleeping. He's going to have to spend time recovering.
Let me ask you a question, and this is something I saw people speculating on. Every time it seemed like the trial was going one way or the other, he would go to the hospital. And I don't mean this to be flippant, but there's the umbrella guy and there's a magician. Why isn't there a doctor with him all the time? Why would he have to get up? No, I'm not being a wise guy. I mean, it seems like in the middle of the night he would be taken to the hospital. I mean, it seems like he could have a staff of physicians there sort of around the clock. Huh?
I've never asked him that question. He has had personal physicians certainly in the past. He didn't intend to make these trips to the hospital. He had legitimate physical problems.
Okay.
I mean, he has a very serious back problem, and he really had emotional problems. He had trouble eating and sleeping. Michael was not emotionally built for this kind of a process. Month after month of sitting in a courtroom listening to all this nonsense thrown at you, knowing your life and your freedom are on the line, it was a very hard process for him emotionally.
Now, I know a lot of people have been critical of you, but I know you do an awful lot of pro bono work.
Yes.
It's terrific within different communities, and is that why you took this? You saw it as an injustice?
I saw it as tremendous injustice. I'd known Randy Jackson for a long time. He's a good friend of mine. He asked me if I would talk to Michael about his case, and I flew to Florida, met Michael, talked to him extensively about it, and I just... very quickly, and I'm a very intuitive person, I said, this cannot be the monster they're portraying. What is this? Because what they were saying was that this kid had cancer and that he intentionally plied him with alcohol so he could molest him. And you get to know Michael and you say, this is absurd. They're also saying he masterminded a conspiracy to abduct a family to Brazil. Michael Jackson wouldn't even know how to conceive of such a thing. Michael Jackson is an artist. He's a creative spirit. He likes to sit in a tree and compose music. You know, I mean, and he freely says that. You know, there are
theories. See, that's where my part comes in, sitting in the tree. I have to do the sitting in the tree.
Yeah, well, he loves climbing trees. He says other people like football and baseball. I like climbing trees. He freely admits that.
Well, Tom, I appreciate you coming here. Tell us your side of the story. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thomas Mesereau.